talking with Phil Tsang of the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Phil, 2015, one of those years that I guess we at some point it had to happen. We had to finally back up a little bit from these year-after-year gains that we had seen. But still, there were some bright spots. I know that within our export of beef and pork into the global market.
Yeah, definitely. I think the real bright spot last year in 2015 was the Korean market. As you know, there was a tremendous amount of emphasis and effort put into the Korean Free Trade Agreement of 4 years ago. I think the dividends from that are paying off. We have a duty advantage vis-a-vis our competitors in that market. And our exports last year were up 7% in a year when, you know, we had a limited supply of cattle. The dollar was stronger. And so with a lot of headwinds, we still made a lot of progress in the Korean market. I would say other markets that were very positive for us last year were, the NAFTA countries. They're down a little bit, but both Mexico and Canada have been very consistent. And I'm glad that there's not any more impediments that we have right in front of us that's going to impede that flow, because that constituted about 40% of our total exports of beef were going to both Canada and Mexico. I think Vietnam was another market that was in the plus column last year. We see that as a growing economy. There's about 90 million people in Vietnam. Due to their fact that they were visited by the French 100 years ago and introduced to good meat, and also to wine and the Western tastes. When you visit Vietnam, it's a very eclectic and the cuisine is very, very good. And we see a lot of opportunities there for our high-quality products. Singapore is another market that was in the plus column. So as we take a look at the world, you know, there is the ups and downs, but for the most part, it was positive in 2015, even though the numbers don't reflect that.
You alluded to Canada, Mexico. The repeal of COOL happened, of course, in December. What does that mean going forward as far as dealing with these two important customers of ours?
Well, I think psychologically it puts us on a better footing. I mean, it was an adversarial relationship. If there was anything that would occur or as a result of whatever could be happening, even if you have some product detained at the border, all this was overhanging it in the past. So I think any time in a trade relationship when you can remove any kind of a trade impediment, it's going to be healthy. And so I think longer term, it's going to create more trust, and it's going to create a better environment for us to trade. Trade always does best in calm waters.
The thing that's, of course, going on right now that's out in front of us, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, that has been negotiated. The United States is a party to that. And I know that, we're hearing from a lot of different folks, our trade ambassador and many, many others, how important this is for beef and for pork. For the beef industry, I guess it's vital if we're going to ever get back on a level playing ground with Japan.
I think for the beef industry, the Trans-Pacific Partnership is huge. I mean, we can think in the past of the Japan Agreement in 88. We can think of the NAFTA Agreement in 94. But actually, this is a huge agreement. And what it does, it completes the scenario with Japan to a large degree. Taking that duty from 38% down to 9% is going to translate in a lot of additional product going into that market. A lot of people kind of write off Japan and say, well, it's an aging population. They're not going to eat the product. But last year they had 20 million tourists in Japan. They figure by their Olympics, which they're going to hold in 2020, there'll be 30 million tourists. In 1 month, that kind of tourist trade, if you will, it equates to all the loss in Japanese population. And so what we see is a whole new market, especially in the food service market, tremendous opportunities in hotels and restaurants. The building that's going on over there right now is phenomenal. And so it's really a market that I think is very exciting. Also, when you look at TPP, there's other markets in TPP that are very promising for us. We look at Singapore, and some of these markets, are, of course, very good. Our numbers are up this year. Vietnam is always going to be a market, and the protection going down in that market. So, again, we see a lot of opportunities. And also from countries that are not in TPP, like the Philippines and Indonesia, they want to be in this. And they understand that's and Taiwan. And so this is very important for us, I think, what TPP means now and what it means for the future.
And I guess what the longer we stay away from ratification or we don't get ratification done, it becomes more problematic, I would think, for your sales efforts.
Well, I think, you know, if you look at this historically, when we do it, an administration does a trade agreement, both in our country and the other countries that are doing the agreement, they're the ones that initial the agreement. Where you have democracies and these people leave, you have usually the opposition or someone else comes in. They're not as close to it, and so you don't have the passion to complete it as you have. And so to me, the sense of urgency or the urgency of the now is really more important, because as you have elections, for example, if Japan had an election and their opposition parties got in, they're not going to have the same fervor to do this agreement. And so I think it's really important that to get this agreement, we work now to really pass it. So I would say all the resources we have in the United States, everybody who is even on the fence, this is an opportunity to really take a look at this, because it really means a huge amount to our industry, not only just from tariff reductions, but with the SPS measures. There's 29 chapters to it. It's a profound agreement that we should really advantage ourselves with.
I was reading something in recent days regarding the Chinese, and of course we continue to try to open that market. And one of the concerns, I guess, of the Chinese, the traceability of U.S. beef.
Well, the Chinese have, when we had BSE back in 2003, they basically put up about 22 demands for us, and we have, I think, erased all but one of those, and one of those was traceability. The fact that we are considered a negligible risk in the OIE, that means you have to have a credible traceability system, and it's recognized by the OIE in France. That's understood. I think the Chinese understand that. But we are working to give them more assurances that if they need to have information about the cohorts, if they need information, that we have a voluntary system that will pass muster and that will give them complete confidence in our traceability that we can do in the United States. So I think we're working very closely with our government, with APHIS, and I think that hopefully there'll be meetings conducted with the Chinese here very soon. And the Chinese will be coming as an audit team to take a look at our plants and take a look at our records and some of these types of things. So I think that we have a great story to tell, and hopefully the sooner we can get them here and get this thing going, the better, because if you want to really make a big boost in 2016, getting that Chinese market open, it's been the fastest growing beef market over the last decade, and there's a lot of people that are participating in it, and the United States needs to be in the Chinese market.
One of the things that we've talked about before, Phil, is the several of our state beef councils, Oklahoma and others, Texas, Kansas, Nebraska, a lot of those have basically designated, earmarked additional monies from their side of the dollar checkoff to do projects in conjunction with USMEF. This is, I know, an important part of what you're able to do to try to move the needle.
It's becoming a very important part to move the needle. And I think number one is, you know, when we go overseas and sell our product, people are looking for differentiation. They're looking for something that's unique. They're looking for a story. They're looking for something different. And this is how you leverage your products against your competition. And so as we start telling the state stories, as we start telling sometimes even regional stories, it could range from barbecue to whatever, this becomes very, very important in these markets. And so what we have right now as a result of these dollars, both from Oklahoma and also from Texas and other country states, you know, we have a barbecue boom going on actually in Japan. We have a boom going on in Korea. This is creating more opportunity to sell more products into that market, and that's what's creating this growth. So the fact that these states have become involved, they come to see the market, they come to see their investments, they talk to the people in these markets, it creates confidence. There's so many benefits of working closely with states as opposed to saying, quote, U.S. beef or U.S. pork, for example. As you can personalize it more, it becomes much more effective as far as our selling messages and marketing in that market.
Big picture, as far as you try to cast vision and lead your team, what are the things out there that you see that you're trying to address, that where you see the opportunity for our exports?
I think number one is what we're always trying to do in the United States Meat Export Federation is always trying to understand the changes that are occurring in the markets. Markets are constantly changing. We don't look at markets as being old markets or new markets. Markets are markets, just like the New York Stock Exchange is a market. It changes every day. So I think what we have to do is really take a look at what's this change and try to communicate more effectively to our constituencies here in the United States what are the realities of these markets, and here's how you can take advantage of it. I think one of the things we have to take a look at is as we become more market driven, that we have to listen to these markets more, and if this is what a market requires, that's what we have to produce for. And I think there's a change going on in this industry about this, but that's how we're going to be successful in these markets, by providing the types of products produced the ways these countries want them, and based on a scientific and rational background. I think we have a lot to look forward to in the future.